How long were you in the service?
Drafted for 2, so just stayed 2 years. I lucked out and went to Europe instead of Vietnam, and my brother had the best job in the Army, chaplain's assistant for the head chaplain of the Army, a one-star general, at Fort Carson, Colorado. And the general would go on tour for like 2 weeks. He'd say, go home. So my brother would go home. He went home like 12 times. So he was home more than he was in the Army.
Wow.
Because he didn't go anywhere with the general. My brother just left, you know, went back to Minnesota.
So you get back to Minnesota in what year then?
1972.
And what do you do at that point?
Well, I went back to the city of Minneapolis because I was working the summer at the city of Minneapolis on paving. And so when I got out, I had 3-year seniority because they counted the seniority since it was civil service. So I went back to paving. And I stayed there till July because as soon as Bruce got out of the Army in February of 73, we moved into a little house right by Crystal Airport in Crystal, paid $180 a month for rent. But the house is like a wreck. We had a big hole in the wall from the living room into the kitchen, so we could pass beers from the refrigerator right into the living room where we had all our equipment.
The whole band lived there?
The whole band. No, the drummer and brother Bruce and I.
So you got the old band members back together?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When you came back?
Yep.
Okay.
Well, we got our bass player back that we had, Chris Kamen, and then Kevin Silvers was on drums.
Where'd Kevin come from?
Well, Kevin lived a block away from us, and we knew him because he was in other bands before that. And I think he played with Randy Anderson for a little while, and you know, when he was really young.
So you go right back to practicing in your house then?
Yep. So actually that band was my brother Bruce on lead guitar, I was rhythm, Chris Kamen on bass, and Kevin Silvers on drums, so we just had 4 guys. Dwight Azen was now playing with Sterling. In fact, I went down to Uncle Sam's or whatever it was called in 72 or 73 there, and I took pictures of Sterling. I showed up, and Dwight goes, you're back, or whatever. But I got pictures of those guys at that time, yeah.
So what happens next?
Well, then we were looking for, you know, to play out. I said, well, maybe we should go back to Marsh and all this. But one of our friends, Tom Eichels, was in Pure Honey, I mean. And he was in a band called the Royal Organization. And he had a contract with the Hideaway on Rice Street in Maplewood and the Badger Room in Hudson, Wisconsin. And they had like a 6-piece show-type group where they did Broadway musicals, country western shows, 50s acts, they'd dress up and all that stuff. And so he got us into that gig, okay? And so that's when we started doing shows. We would take square dance lessons. I wore all black, hat, cowboy shirt, and then pants. And our drummer wore all blue. The bass player wearing all white, you know, so we did that. Then we did Broadway musicals like Fiddler on the Roof and Zorba the Greek. You know, because the agent wanted us, that booked Tom's group and us, wanted us to be a Class A nightclub group.
Who's the agent?
Well, it was Dottie Smith.
What with what group? With
well,
what agency?
The Smith Entertainment Agency.
Okay.
But she was she said she was French Canadian, but a French Canadian Indian or something like that, right? But she was a gypsy, and so she kind of took our money because it was like she paid us. The club owner would pay her and then they'd pay us. And after we were there for a couple of years, you know, we said, I thought we were going to get raises. And I just talked to the owner. I said, gee, Jim, I thought you were going to give us a raise sometime. I gave you guys 4 raises because he hired us for like $160 a week each. And we got like an extra 20, an extra 20 every week. We figured out that Dottie stole about $5,000 from us, you know.
Now, the owner of the Hideaway and the owner of the Badger Room are the same.
Yeah, Jim Tallgren and Sharon Tallgren.
Okay. So you would alternate between the two venues?
Yes, 3 months at a time. So the Royal Organization would be in Hudson for 3 months. But since they had, like, seniority, when it turned winter, they would go to Maplewood because they lived in Twin City area. So then we had to drive to Hudson. And when we played Hudson, it was open 9 to 2 Because at 1 o'clock in the morning, everybody from Minnesota went across the 94 bridge. And Jim Talgren, a lot of times, would make more money in the last hour than he did all night. Because then the place would be packed. And during the summer, when we play there during the summer, twice they had the fire department come out and hose down everybody in the street. Because they had like five bars in two blocks. They had Dibbo's across the street. And then they had the Rose Room down north of us. Then they had another club. So all these clubs were there and everybody would come across. And yeah, it was kind of like a couple of riots, you know, that they had.
And the drinking age in Wisconsin was 18, correct?
Yep, mm-hmm.
So now you have a new band name at this time, right?
Yep, Kiss of Rain.
How'd that name come about?
My brother Bruce just made it up. And he says, oh, let's call it Kiss of Rain. That's as far as I remember how it happened, you know, because there's no rhyme or reason to it. There's nothing that we saw or anything like that. Well, let's call it Kiss of Rain. Okay, we'll do that.
Now, Denny Johnson happens to have a CD of the band playing live.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to write down some of the songs. Do you want to read through the song list there and tell us the songs Kiss of Rain was playing?
Okay. So we eventually had Rick Gilmore join the band. And when we made the album, Rick Gilmore was in our group as a keyboard player. He would sing Superstition by Stevie Wonder. Then our drummer, Kevin Silvers, would sing Boogie on Raggy Woman by Stevie Wonder. Then we did Living for the City. Then we'd do like Leonard Skinner, Saturday Night Special. Then we had Chad Magnuson in the group, and he would play flute. So we did Locomotive Breath, and he's still playing that song today.
And that's by who?
Jethro Tull. And then our bass player, Mike Curtis, at the time, he would sing You're 16 by Ringo. So we did that. Then we did, when I was in Europe, I saw Slade, and I really liked him. So we did Goodbye to Jane by Slade. Then David Bowie, Chad Magnuson would sing Suffragette City. And then Kevin, he sang Shadow Your Smile. So, we, you know, whenever there'd be a fight breaking out, we'd start singing that song, slow him down a little bit, you know.
That's the old standard, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then we did Easy Living by Uriah Heep.
From
Rick
the
Gilmore.
UK.
Yep. Gilmore played that keyboard really good on that one. And then we did Peaceful Easy Feeling. My brother Bruce would sing that. Then we did Moon Dance. Chad sang that, I think. Then we did Put It Where You Want It by Average White Band. Then we did Let It Ride by Bachman Turner Overdrive. Nothing to Hide by Spirit. And Gilmore had a little ribbon on his Yamaha double keyboard. It made it sound like a siren. So on the record, you only hear this. But it worked out pretty good. So Nothing to Hide is kind of a cool song. Then we did Foot Stomping Music. Usually at the end of the night, Kevin would sing that.
Who did that originally?
Grand Funk Railroad.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
What about you? Which did you sing lead on some?
Yeah, I sang lead on Jerry Lee Lewis songs, Beatles songs. I sang most of the Beatles songs. And we did a lot of those.
Now, I understand you had a Thursday night greaser night.
We would do a 50s show. We'd dress up in black leather jackets, put garbage cans on the stage and stuff like that, different things, you know. And then we would do songs from the musical Grease, you know, like...
The musical with Olivia Newton-John and
yeah.
John
mm-hmm.
Travolta.
Yep, and so we did some of those songs because it was kind of like the Broadway musical set mm-hmm. that we did. So that was one of the leather jacket shows we did.
So you did all 50s and 60s
yep.
for that show?
Yep, mm-hmm. Elvis, Jerry Lee Lewis, Chuck Berry.
Was there a difference in the crowds between the Hideaway and the Badger Room?
Yeah, the Badger Room had a lot of transients that were get off the highway and come and see the bars and stuff like that, and a lot of them from Wisconsin. And so we'd get a different crowd in the Badger Room because a lot of people had never been there before, but we had our regulars. So probably half the crowd was people we'd never seen before, and the only time we saw them, they'd be gone somewhere else. At the Hideaway, we had like a regular group coming out all the time. We had baseball teams that would show up. then we had some a biker group. They didn't have a name, but they would all show up in their bikes and their leathers and stuff, and they'd come in and party. And so now, we had kind of a regular crowd there.
Now, when did Randy Anderson join on lead guitar?
Well, at the end of around 75, when we were... So he was in the band for just a few months, and he was so young, he didn't have a driver's license. I had picked him up at his house. I think he was 16, but he didn't have a driver's license, I don't think. But he didn't have a car, I knew that. So I would pick him up and then drive him home after, at 2 in the morning. Randy was great, though. He could play anything.
Now, was this five, 6 nights a week?
Yeah, we did 6 nights a week, and we would have Monday off. So we'd play Sunday and then start on Tuesday again.
So you have a run there from July of 73 all the way up to February of 75.
Right.
Just back and forth between those two clubs.
Right.
You must have developed some kind of a fan club.
Yeah, we did. We had a lot of people from Brooklyn Center and North Minneapolis who'd come out and see us all the time if we were at the Hideaway or at the Badge Room. You know, I'd say 20 people of the crowd would be, regular people that came from our neighborhoods and stuff like that.
Now, I understand in March of 75, you played for the opening of Spirit Mountain Chalet in Duluth.
Yep, we got booked 28 days in a row, and we were playing 8 hours a day.
8 hours?
8 hours a day. We played from 1 to 4 and then 9 to 1. And we were doing all our shows, too. So we got so tired of singing songs that I told Kevin, sing that song for me. I can't sing it no more. Because our throats were getting hoarse and stuff because we're singing 8 hours a day, 28 days in a row. Then March of 75, I went back to Minneapolis and I got married March 22nd, 1975. And about 2 weeks later, Spirit Mountain called me up, says, we want you up there again for another 28 days in a row. And I told him, no. So that's too much work. Okay, we'll pay you a third more than you made last time. I said, we'll be right up. And we went up there and did it again. Another 28 days in a row, 8 hours a day. And after that, we were really burnt up. And then our last job was at Ryan's Ballroom. And then we broke up after that. So 75, the band was done.
Let's talk about your recording session at ASI. When was that and what happened there?
Well, I was in 75. I think it might have been in July. But Dave Rifkin was our engineer who did Prince's 1999. He did Fine Young Cannibals. And now I think he was in, Dave Rifkin was the lead guitar player for
Chancellors.
Chancellors, yep. And he's in the Minnesota Hall of Fame, or Music Hall of Fame. I got pictures of us playing, or him, in the studio with us, and I sent it to him just a couple years ago.
Was Dan Holmes there for those sessions?
David Anthony was there. I got pictures of David Anthony there. Steve Greenberg from Funky Town, he was there because he knew Dave Rifkin. They were in the room while we were recording.
So how many songs did you record at ASI?
Just two. And we did Lover, which Rick Gilmore sang and wrote. And we had our harmony. And then he did Can't Keep My Mind Off My Music. So he wrote both those songs. And Dave Rifkin let us use their Mellotron, for the background orchestra. And it was really nice. And then Rick Gilmore and Chad Magnuson did a dual flute solo on one side. And they did a dual sax solo on the other side, because Rick, he could play like 12 instruments. And we never knew he could play flute until like a week before we were going to record. And all of a sudden he shows up with a flute. I said, was that Chad's? Oh, it's mine. He picks it up. Oh, my God. Okay, it's great. It's unbelievable.
Now, were those two songs pressed up as a 45?
Yes, it was.
On what label?
Cloud Records.
Your own label?
Called Kiss Rain. That's what we called it.
How many records were pressed?
1,000.
1,000.
Yeah, and
were they pressed at here at KBank or shipped off somewhere?
They were shipped off somewhere because I can't remember who printed it. Okay.
So you got the 1,000 records back, and what happened? What'd you do with them?
We sold them at the friends and the clubs and, you know, where we would play, you know, but mostly at the Badger Room. We were still there.
Now, there's a YouTube videos of both of these songs with Rick singing. Did you videotape those?
No, not those. We videotaped later after we were doing our Beatles show.
Those two songs. Those two songs are on YouTube. Do you want to
pull them? Yeah, that's right. My son did those. He took photographs from us, and my son made those.
Oh, it's photographs.
Yeah, they're just photographs.
It's not a live videotape.
No.
It's a photograph.
No.
Got it. Okay.
We had a guy that came out to videotape us, because videotapes cost like $2,000 back then. You know, they just kind of were really expensive. And a guy came out to videotape Kiss the Rain all night. But when he got there, some guys were fighting in the front, and they knocked him out because he got in the way of these guys that were fighting, and they knocked him out. So we took him to the hospital, and he never videotaped us, never saw him again. Hmm. We used to have the cops in the bathroom. If they weren't there on Friday night, they'd be there Saturday night. Because he said, well, the cops weren't here tonight. They'll be here tomorrow. Because we had a lot of fights in that place.
Did you sell out all the 45s?
Pretty much. I have two left at home. I don't know how many records are out there. But we sold them mostly to friends. Then we gave away a lot to relatives and stuff like that. So.
Now, is that the only recording that Kiss of Rain did?
Yes.
In the studio?
In the studio.
Okay.
Then the other thing was just a live one. That was it.
Was that studio session all done in one day?
Yes, one day. That's all the money we had.
Do you know who has the master tape?
I think my brother Bruce does.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because we left. I moved to Arizona, and when I did, I gave him all my records, all my vinyls I had. You know, I wasn't bringing all that stuff down to Phoenix. So I'm pretty sure my brother Bruce has the master tape.
So Kiss the Rain comes to an end in 75, and what do you do after that?
While we were in the bedroom, we did a Beatles show, and we used to wear just black and white suits with a tie and a white shirt and stuff, and then we wore marching band uniforms instead of Sergeant Pepper uniforms. But the Beatles show kind of sold more than all the other shows we did. People would be out, they couldn't get in the club to see it, because it was just too full. We said, let's just do the Beatles show and see how that works. So for about, let's see, that was 75, and the first time we played the Beatles show was at an AA meeting called Freedom Fest 76. And we donated our time just to see how the show would go. And there was 10,000 people there. And then George Gobel was there because he was an alcoholic. Buzz Aldrin was there from the moon landing. He was there. Dick Van Dyke was there.
Was that at the convention center?
It was at the Minneapolis Civic Center.
Minneapolis Civic.
Down by the Minneapolis Sports Center where the